Hello, this is Mark, the webmaster for Beyond Vibration. I'm here with Diana Roth. The objective of this conversation really is a little more informal, well, a great deal more informal. Diana hasn't prepared anything as such for this conversation. This is a conversation between Diana and I about some of her travels. And some of her experiences. The reason I've asked Diana for this interview is because I personally find it interesting to hear her real experiences that I can then see some different possibilities for what is out there and what is happening outside of the box of what I can actually see at the moment with my current development. So I'm asking Diana these questions for herself. I don't purport to know about what Diana's talking about in every sense. Some things I have experiences of, but mostly I'm looking at what Diana's experiences are so I can hear about them myself, and hopefully you'll enjoy it too. So the first thing I'd like to, maybe let's just start it off, Diana. If you could just talk about maybe some of the, let's start it at now, actually. What about describing a bit about your reality right now with how you work with different beings who work with you closely, the different beings who help you around the house to protect you, and also visitor guide, and anywhere that might lead. Let's just start there, if you don't mind.
Okay, this is based. I'm going to go into the past a little bit and build on it, and I think you'll see why as this progresses. But I'm sure this interview will also be run by Yodi Coyote. So, God help us all. Funny thing happened to me when I was a kid. I was about 8 or 9, and I lived in a house in Daytona Beach, Florida. It was about half a block from the beach. And it was a modern house for back in the 50s, 40s. I guess this was in the 40s, late 40s. And it had a big glass jalousie windows on the front of it. We weren't supposed to throw anything that would go through the wind. And I remember I threw a ball and it broke one of the window panes on the upper part of it. And my father came out of the house. I guess he was going to give me a spanking or give me a talking to.
Yeah.
And I was always a really skinny kid and real fast. And so I ran away from him and I climbed up a tree. And I always had the ability to make myself invisible when I wanted to. So I just climbed up in that tree and sat there and watched them search for me for hours and hours and hours. They were under the tree. They were all over calling and searching. And I just sat there real quiet, real still. And I wasn't that high up. And then when I heard them talking about calling the police because they thought I'd been kidnapped, I decided I better come out the tree. And when I came down, they go, "Where were you?" And I said, "I was up that tree over there." They said, "No, you weren't. We looked there." And I said, "I was up that tree over there. You just couldn't see me." But by then, of course, they'd run around so much, nobody was mad at me. They were just so happy to see me. So I guess that's one of the first examples of the benefits of neutral intent.
Yeah.
You know? But it was just has always struck me as being really, really funny. And then when I was a kid, about a year or two later, I always had my visitor guide, who is from the Pleiades, and she always whispered in my right ear when I was a young kid. I knew she was there, and she whispered in my right ear, but she had a kind of a cross between a very soft, almost hissy sound. It was very non-human sounding. I mean, I knew she wasn't human. And I wasn't scared of her at all because I'd known her, but she would whisper in my ear and did that for a long time before I was able to see her, but now I could see her. And I started off as being able to see her sort of translucent, but now I see her physically, full on physically, just like I was looking at any other human being, I see her. And she comes and goes, and of course, if I have a question to ask her, she's right here. And she's very funny. She loves to laugh. And I wrote, I believe it was in the Animal Spirits Without Fear blog, about her eyes. I asked her. I knew that those big things they say are the lifeless eyes are not eyes, they're lenses, because they can't. Well, any species coming to our Earth that doesn't have the same atmosphere couldn't come without protection. You know, I mean, it'd be like us going to Jupiter and trying to live there. You know, it just won't physically work. So they have to have a protective suit, and I don't find this unreasonable or weird at all. But I asked her what her eyes look like, because somebody had asked me that, and she raised her lenses, and the colors and the movement of those colors and the depth of those colors was just astounding. I could only stand to look at them for about a minute or two, and then she had to flip them down because I was just so unprepared for the intensity of it. And then she later showed me her body, and she's more, she has arm, what would look to us to be arms and legs, but she told me that she doesn't have that on her world. She says, I have to have them here because I need them in order to function on Earth, which is reasonable. But she's heavier. But again, she's multicolored. She has all of these colors. And most of these colors, you won't even see on Earth. You have to be in an altered state to even be able to, and probably way up in the dimensions to even be able to see the depth of the colors, because we're very limited in our senses here in what colors we can act, what colors our eyes see and our brains realize. We're really very limited. We don't think we are, but we're almost blind, actually. There's just so much more color and movement and sounds are different and everything, the higher the dimensions you go. Now, I lived in a neighborhood for 40 years. It was a middle class neighborhood when I moved into it, and it kind of started going down, and I was having some health issues, and my friend wanted me to move closer to him so that he could, you know, get to me faster. And so I always, in that house, though, I was aware that I had two dragons that lived on my roof. And one's a fire dragon and one's a chaos dragon, and they're a mated pair. And the chaos dragon very rarely wakes up. I saw him take off one time, and I thought, oh, Lord, whoever he's going to visit, I wouldn't want to be. Because they can really put a world of hurt on. And they're not small dragons. They're huge dragons. And the fire dragon, she's a true fire dragon. In any kind of incoming negative energy or invasive anything, she just fires at it. It looks like anti-aircraft fires, what it looks like. And sometimes if there's more than one person doing it, it sort of looks like World War II anti-aircraft fire. And it's funny to me, but I mean, she's up there and then it'll stop. And then they go back to sleep. They sleep with their tails in their mouth, and they go back to sleep until something wakes them up again. And so
what does the Chaos Dragon do? Like, just bring, like, how would that work? What does the Chaos Dragon do? I know that's probably
Chaos Dragon. Yeah, it basically can bring chaos to anybody it so chooses to. It can just make everything run amok, you know. It can, and it can also take chaos and make it not chaos. It can work in either direction, but a mad chaos is going to dragon would rain chaos down on you. A chaos dragon working with you would help you be able to see the chaos is not true chaos, but there's a very definite order to it.
Huh.
And they're a mated pair. And then I also have these little guardian dragons in the house, and they're small, about the size of a big cat, I guess, maybe a little larger. And they come in all colors, and they're very young. They're just a few hundred years old, and they come and stay in houses, kind of learn how to work with humans, and they're really funny. And the animals, my dogs and cats, love them because they like to play with them. but they can also move things on you. They can like take your keys and put them somewhere, or they can kind of do funny things. So, it's sort of like having a coyote in your house, and it's not a misfortune. I guess I'm fortunate to have them all in here, so I'm always losing things, but they always get put back right where I knew they were to start with, so it works out okay. But I remember the day that I moved from that house to this house. I remember thinking, oh, I sure hope this dragon's come over here. And as I was following the moving van, and as we were driving down the street, I could see them both flying over the moving van, and I thought, oh, thank God. Because I knew they were moving with me, and they did. They flew to the house and lived right on the roof and went to sleep. And
so do you find that when you go to other people's houses, that they tend to have things around that they're not aware of?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everybody's house is full of spirits. They just don't see them. They don't feel them. They don't know they're there. I mean, the whole world is just full of spirits. Your yard's full of spirits. I mean, they're just everywhere. They can be human spirits. They can be animal spirits. They can be... I've had trees walk through my front, you know, they can just move through the house. In all different kinds of alien creatures. And you know, if I see them and they look at me, I'll just acknowledge them and say hello and can I help you? And usually they just say, no, we're just passing through. I get the feeling that they're tourists. That, honest to God, I get the feeling that they're just visiting. You know, that they know this planet's here and they're just visiting. Like I might go to Denmark, which doesn't to me seem unreasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, we think everything has to come here with a design purpose, but no, I don't think so. You know, they just kind of come and go. And then sometimes I'll have the odd spirit that comes that will hang around, especially a human spirit, and they and it'll come up to me and I'll ask if it needs help, and it'll say, "Who are you?" And I'll tell them, and I'll say, "Do you know that you died?"
Oh,
and
yeah.
They most often don't know they've died.
Huh.
And they'll say no. And I'll say, well, would you like for me to help you move on to the white light or on to heaven? And they'll say yes. And then Crow shows up, because Crow's the one that will take them. And Crow shows up, and they just become a soul. I see souls as little stars, and get right on Crow, and Crow just a flash, and he's taking them on across. And that sometimes it's that way with dogs, especially dogs and cats that have been abused. I do a lot. I've done a lot of work with them, and they'll cross, and I can see them in the spirit world after they get over there, and they sometimes come back and visit me, you know. And I could see them, and I just acknowledge them and thank them for coming. And then when I was at that other house, I became aware that I had a portal in my backyard, and I knew where it was, and I knew that I had a little entity that's about three and a half feet tall, and he looked like a heavy kid, but he was totally covered in a bodysuit, and I would see him from time to time. And then when I moved over to this house, I have this willow chair. It's made out of bent willow strips, and it just kind of sits off to the side. And that's where he likes to sit. And I looked over, and he was sitting in that chair, and he told me his name was Rex. And I said, Rex, I thought you were guarding the portal over there. And he told me, he said, no, I closed that portal. I opened that other one in your backyard. And I knew there was another portal there. And I said, well, why did you close it? He said, didn't need it anymore. And I asked him, I said, well, why did you put that one in my backyard? And he said, because I know you won't bother it. And I said, so I'm not supposed to go through the portal. He says, oh, no, you must never go through that portal. And the funniest thing about that is that he doesn't like it to be really, really cold. He doesn't seem to mind hot weather, but boy, he doesn't like really cold weather. And he doesn't like stormy weather. And he'll come in and he'll sit in that willow chair. And when my dog Roscoe, that crossed last August, was alive, he was big enough he could get on my couch. And he had a bad back, so I had to put bar stools and all these crazy things on my couch so he couldn't get up there. And the funniest thing is that when Rex is sitting in that willow chair and people come in the house, they would go to the effort of moving a bar stool to sit on my couch. They will not sit in the willow chair if Rex is sitting there. Yeah. And it's just so funny to me. You know, I never say anything, but I'm just about dying laughing on the inside. There may be four of them sitting on the couch, but not one of them in the willow chair. Huh. You know, it's like, I don't know if he makes it invisible, or if he just puts off a do not sit there. it's really funny. And that goes for the animals. The animals wouldn't get up in there either. So, and I've done a lot of this over my life. I've done a lot of just forming a neutral intent, going to altered state of consciousness and being pulled. And one of the most astounding ones that I had was, I was doing a meditation, a Whitley Strieber meditation, and we were supposed to be meditating on something else, and for some reason they don't work for me. I always go somewhere else. So I feel the pull, and I just go with the pull, and I go to the center of the galaxy. Huh. And I just get plopped down, and I realize that there's all of these different species, just hundreds of thousands of different species, and they're forming like a ring around what is supposed to be the black hole at the center of the galaxy.
Yeah, okay.
And I asked, why are you here? And they said, we're protecting the center of the galaxy. We're protecting the species that live in the center of the galaxy. And I was looking around for a human representative. Interestingly enough, it was a Neanderthal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was the human representative, because I knew that they had migrated in mass, that they ascended in mass. That's why they disappeared. They weren't run off by the other bunch. They just descended. And she came up to me and she said, would you like to see what's in there? And I said, yes, if it's permitted. And I guess I went across the event horizon, or whatever they call it, where that's right there on the edge of the black hole. It was very thin. And when I got in there, that's where the oldest non-vibrating species in the galaxy are. That's where they are, is in there at the center of the universe. They no longer need a planet. They no longer need anything. And that's where they are. And it was the most peaceful, beautiful place. I only stayed in there for maybe a minute, and I was back out, because I don't think I was ready to have that kind of intensity. But that was a very profound experience.
Did you find that they were all just looking in on it, or are they...
No, they were actually, it was like they formed a huge circle around that thing, and they were actually protecting it. They would not allow anything inside of it. So in other words, any kind of a species who was not good or warring, or maybe even human, that tried to come up to that, they weren't going to get through. Because there were some fierce-looking species there. I mean, they were not going to get through. And I think I wrote about it somewhere. And I think, but nobody believed me. But that was one of the most profound ones. And then another one was one time Orca took me up to the place before existence, where the chaos is. And he set me down in what felt like the middle of space. And I see Orca taking in this stellar matter and excreting galaxies and stars and planets. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. But I always knew that Orca was a creator being, but I just felt so blessed to have witnessed him actually doing that. And then he just brought me back, and that was that. And then there are the tubes that I keep talking about, that I know that the Orcas are in control of, and they're off all of the oceans all around the world.
I have an inclination to, I've got the tubes written down here to get back to. I just have an inclination to
hold off on them.
Not to hold off, but to just to ask you to address the thing that if you haven't been experiencing this kind of thing, it sounds completely outlandish, and it sounds like what I'm looking at is, I can see I'm listening to you and thinking of the perspective of the possible person coming and listening, and wanting to see if you can just address the difference.
Coming in thinking I'm a nutter.
Yeah, because I totally, look, I have to laugh, because I have, when I first read something that you wrote on the website I was managing, I just had to laugh because I thought, well, either this woman is a total nutcase or she's really, really interesting. And I needed to talk with you because I tend to, I have a much better ability to discern people by speaking with them. So I contacted you and I couldn't stop laughing because I found you very funny. I don't know, it was the combination of things. I found it really quite fun to talk with you and immense talking with other people too. I think it was a conference call and that sort of like fit. It was like, when something funny happens in a class and, the teacher's not aware of it or something. It's kind of like that. But I would really like it if you could. I think it would be worthwhile to help people to hear you a bit better, to address that, because a lot of people's rational brains would be going like off the.
That's why I've got the letting go of the ego, that because that's where that comes in.
Yeah,
I probably began doing this seeing animal spirits. I probably began this seeing the animal spirits first, and learning to talk to them. And all of the communication is through telepathy, and it's very strange when you first do it, because you've got to get out of your mind ego, and you can't have a doubt that, oh, I imagined that. It has nothing to do with imagination. And when you talk to something telepathically, you get that response instantaneously. It doesn't have time to move through your mind. It is so fast. But if you then think about it, if you think about the response that you got or the trip that you got, then you have moved it through your mind ego, and the mind ego is going to reprogram it into something that is more to its liking and not the true spiritual experience that you had. And I always talk to people about having patience, because what you're actually doing when you first start doing this work is you're building a bank of experiences. And the more experiences that you get in your bank, the more comfortable you are trusting your intuition and your spiritual side. But when you first start out, you sort of have a low bank balance, like of a dollar. But with every experience, if you can think of that as a deposit into your bank of experiences, then it grows and you learn to trust your instincts. Then you'll find that you're making decisions in your physical life based on instincts. And they're going to be far more correct for you than if you just think about them and think about them and think about them. In fact, I'm notorious in my family for making what most people in the family view as split-second life-altering decisions in a heartbeat. And I never change them. And I never change my mind.
Yeah,
so they know no better than to try to get me to change my mind, because they know once I say, this is what I'm going to do, that's what I'm going to do. And you can just forget about trying to tell me that that's not good for me, because I've already made my mind up. That's what I'm going to do, because I trust my intuition.
Yeah, that sounds like someone who's been working on that particular skill and that particular ability for a long time, probably many lifetimes, working to become more trusting in their own intuition, wouldn't you say? I mean,
yeah, and see, I believe that we all are born knowing this, and society edits it out. That's why I believe that children are very much easier to, it's much easier for a child to contact its spirit, its soul, than it is for an adult who's never done it.
Yeah.
So the younger that you start out doing it, the easier it is. And I started from the time I was born, because what, at 2 years old, I could name all the constellations and first magnitude stars in the northern hemisphere, and I shouldn't have been able to do that. I shouldn't have been able to do that, not at 2 years old. And, I just knew them. And I can remember sitting up upstairs at my grandfather's house a few days before I was supposed to start first grade, because they didn't have kindergarten back then, thinking, you better learn how to write the alphabet, because you're going to need that when you go to school. So I taught myself the alphabet that day. And when I went into school, I already knew the alphabet, which just amazed the teachers, because I already knew the alphabet. But I can remember just knowing that I was going to need the alphabet, and I better go on and teach it to myself. I mean, just little things like that.
Yeah.
But parents tend to, when a child comes and tells them something that happened to them, they tend to either think of it as a dream, because the child says it's a dream, but you have to remember, a child doesn't know another word other than dream. Dream is a word for, dream is a word that parents are going to teach a child for a probable out-of-body experience, because the parent doesn't know what an out-of-body experience is. So they say it's a dream. So this gets instilled in the child, and then the child thinks they have all these strange, weird dreams, and they're not. They're basically having out-of-body experiences. So the younger you are, for the people listening, the younger that you can start to do this, probably the easier it'll be for you. Because your soul hasn't, you haven't disconnected from your soul. Mm. Now, if you believe that everything, see, I see aliens coming through here that would make Frankenstein beautiful. I mean, they're just different. They're just totally different. And most people would say they were demons or the devil, but they're just a species, and that's how they look.
Yeah.
And I don't ever react. They don't ever scare me. I just greet them the same as I greet one that comes through that's totally what we would consider gorgeous. But once again, I put myself in their, you know, how do I look to them? I probably look really ugly to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's another ego thing. You have to take yourself out of the ego, persuasion. But if when you're starting to go in these altered states, if you have an animal come up to you, you're doing good. You're doing really good. Or if you even have a tree come up to you, you're doing fine. Some people are going through tubes or going down tunnels, and the tunnels are dark, and they're afraid, or they see darkness at the end of the tunnel, and they're afraid to go into the darkness. And what I tell them is to take something that will help you. Take black jaguar, who sees very well in darkness, or owl. And one of the best little animals to help you to see in darkness is lightning bug. because that's what it does, is it finds light and darkness. Huh. And so it's like having a little mini lantern with you. And I've had, I don't know how many people on the Animal Spirits website tell me that they've been chased in their dreams. They may be 30 years old. They've been chased in their dreams by a lion ever since they were a child, and they're terrified of lions. and I say, okay, next time you dream about it, I said, you can control your dreams. So next time you dream about it, stop, turn around, and ask it what it wants. And they'll come back and they'll say, I did that, and all it did was it ran up and gave me a big kiss and ran off. And to think I've been running from this animal for 20-some years, and all I wanted to do was to give me a kiss. You know, they go, thank you for making me stop. But you can't assume. You know, you can't. You just can't assume. And sometimes they will attack you, because your animal spirits sometimes will attack you, but they can't kill you in a dream. I mean, my orca, when I was first doing this work, my orca used to just routinely chop me up into little pieces and then put me back together again. And coyote would come and move my mouth from my head to my rear end and run off laughing.
No. Well, that's pretty funny.
And the orca would get so mad he'd have to come grab my mouth and put it back where it was supposed to go. But, you know, just funny things, some just hilarious things happen. I mean, it's not all serious. It can be just really fun things. Like one time I went to, I don't know where I was, but I was dancing with the fairies and gnomes and trolls and things. And I was at a party with them, and that was a lot of fun. That was beautiful. So it can be anything. And you have to let go of the concept of weird and embrace the unknown, embrace difference and expansion. Because, see, all this stuff happens to encourage your soul to expand, so that when you get to the harder work, you won't be startled.
Okay. Hey, Diana, what about the tubes? Because I cut you off with the tubes, but how about we talk about that a little bit, or what maybe is another possibility to go first would be, the question comes up for me, how did we get here? How did we get to the point, from your perspective, how the heck did we get to where we're so blinded to so many different aspects of different realities that are around that we just don't see?
We develop technology. We developed technology. Technology was basically our downfall, because it threw us into our left brain. When we were hunter-gatherers and lived with one with the earth, we may not have lived as long in physical years, but we certainly learned in spiritual years. And I would say in the last 150 years, the technology has so advanced that we are now, we think we worship God, but we basically, in my view, worship technology.
Huh.
Technology is the, you know, I mean, without technology, I think we would have a much worse off world than if the religion was to disappear. And that's an interesting thought, but that's just the way that I feel. I mean, these things are, sure, they feel nice. I like my air conditioning. I like my stove, but I don't think it's helped further my soul, not a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
And the earth cycles, you know, the earth cycles. Everything cycles. Everything goes through cycles. We go through cycles. We have a life cycle and a death cycle and a return cycle. And the earth has a cycle. And the only thing is that when she goes through her cycle, everything is pretty much gone. And then she, depending on how severe the cycle she's going through, but she's coming up on a pretty good cycle. And the energy, her energy is, if you can feel the heartbeat of the earth, and you can feel the heartbeat of the earth, you sit on the ground. It's very subtle. It's very slow and very deep. The vibration's very deep. And you can feel her heartbeat. And you can feel the energy has changed. I can feel the energy. Energy's changed in the last 10 years.
Like, and in what was, way? Like, how do you experience it different?
The energy is faster. It's not as steady as it was. It's to me, energy is sort of energy flows like a river, and her energy is sort of like, rather than flowing like, say, the Mississippi, she's more flowing, like she's beginning to have some rocks in the way.
Huh.
Like, she's having to adjust. She's having to adjust things. She's having to adjust her temperature. She's having to adjust, and she adjusts her temperature by creating storms and the wind, and she rearranges, if she's uncomfortable with her crush, she rearranges it through earthquakes and volcanic eruptions.
Huh.
I mean, that's if you think about what we walk around on is the skin of the earth.
Yeah.
If she gets an itch and needs to scratch it, something's going to happen.
Yeah. Huh.
And that's how I think. That's how I think of the earth as having a skin. And in the atmosphere around her would be her outer shell, or what she breathes, and she regulates through increasing and decreasing the temperature and the flow of the flow of the trade winds and the jet streams and the severity of the weather. And if you notice that's all kind of slowly happening.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not saying that in 2012, you know, there's going to be this big lightning bolt come out of the sky and strike us all dead, because I don't believe the 2012. I believe that is a calendar. And, we're just going to turn the calendar and make it January 1st.
Might be really worth, let's get back to the tubes, because it seems as though I think that's appropriate to come to.
Yeah, that's one way she's going to re-regulate it.
You've been seeing those tubes for a while, haven't you?
Long time, for at least 20 years. I've been seeing those tubes because I've been working with a worker for all my life, so I've been seeing those tubes for at least 20 years. And they're off all of the oceans all the way around the world, and they're in the huge bodies of water like Mediterranean, the Black Sea.
Great Lake?
Lakes. They go in the Great Lakes. And they go way deep down in the earth and go way up past the earth's atmosphere. And they're filled with some kind of energy. It's kind of, it looks viscous, but it looks like it's got, it looks like it's got bits of stellar, interstellar matter in it. And it just kind of flows. And what Orca showed me was going to happen was when the big earth change happened. And I think this must be a plate shift, a tectonic plate shift, that those tubes are going to come up and protect the oceans, form a dome off, over the oceans, so the water would not boil off Earth. Because Earth without water is a, it would not support life. But that those were the protection for the vast majority of water on Earth. Because what they showed, me were terrible, terrible storms. But of, you know, of heavy rain coming down, of just huge waves, and nothing that anything I don't think could survive in. But of it not actually boiling off. And Orca is in charge of that. The Orcas are in charge of that. Humans, I don't think humans will ever see those tubes. They're what caused the tsunami in Japan. They blew two of those tubes and caused that tsunami because they were mad about the way that the ocean creatures are being treated, especially the whales. And a lot of people said, well, that's terrible. There were so many thousands of humans that were killed. But you have to look at it from Orca's standpoint, how many millions of whales have been killed.
Well, the current view in certain circles about that is that it was TARP technology or... What was really interesting, well, there are a number of different people saying that. Benjamin Fulford talks about it a lot, but that was an attack on the Japanese, and it's interesting how it goes. You know, I'm just saying it because a lot of people would be.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know that there's every time something really really bad happens, they all it seems to get put on HAARP, like the bad tornadoes in Joplin or the bad tornadoes that went across the South or bad hurricanes. They always seem to get put on HAARP. But it's not, you know, it's not HAARP. It's the Earth. I mean, HAARP may be doing some of it, but the pictures that I've seen that supposedly showed evidence of HAARP technology were just overlaid radar images that I've seen, you know, because when you see a TV radar image, they're never from one site. They're always from about, you know, a bunch of different places, and they're always circular. And but I know the Orcas blew those tubes because I saw them blow. And then they announced the tsunami, and I went, whoops. Because I've always said, heaven help humans if the rest of the species on Earth decide they don't like us.
Well, you know, this is probably, I think, talking with you privately is the only time I've ever heard or saw anything like that information about that particular event. It'll be interesting to see.
I don't know of anybody that's ever seen those tubes.
And yeah,
I've asked fairly well-known people in interviews if they know anything about them, and they'll always make fun of the whales, and I'm sitting here thinking that's not a smart thing to do. not with that Orca, you know. But they... that's an ego issue. Whenever I get an answer like that from somebody, I know that they've got an ego issue, and then I pretty much don't pay any attention to what they say, because I know I'm not going to get, I know that they're not going to see what I'm seeing, and I've had enough. I've had enough validation from to know that what I'm seeing is what I'm seeing, because I've worked with people on problems with pet communication, on their animals being sick, and what did I see, and I would tell them what I saw, and they'd take them to the vet, and it would be what I saw, or a lost pet, and where the lost pet was, and where I saw the lost pet to be. And only to for them to come back and find and you know, validate that that was in fact where the pet was.
Here's something that I would like to just say one possibility, because that I see as one possibility that we often jump to conclusions about things that and I think in this particular instance with the Japanese earthquake. If you just look at what Benjamin Fulford reported, was that he was told the reason he attributed that to a man-made cause was that he was told in advance. He said that he was told in advance that it that because of the Japanese continuing to resist cooperating and coming back into the fold with the monetary system and the the effort to bring them back under back into working cooperatively with the Rockefellers and the in the U.S. that this was going to be that something was going to happen on that particular day to give them like a slap. And he then said, he reported that as that that was a reason that, or an evidence that it was a man-caused event. Now, I look at it from, I see a very valid possibility that the, that they could have remote viewed that event and then used it as a way to, and then come back and say, well, this is going to happen, or something's going to happen because if you don't do what we want, and then that event happens, but even though they didn't cause it, they can claim, they can make it look like they've caused it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Oh, but yeah.
It's very possible to remote.
The orcas did not cause the earthquake. They just caused a tsunami. They didn't have anything to do with the earthquake. But yeah, if you can go forward in time and remote view something, of course you could do that.
And all you have to do, it's a very plausible way to work with it, as far as I can.
Yes, it is. It certainly is.
They don't have to be causing the events. They can just see them and then come and then make the threat, and then it happens on the time that they said.
It's right, like, or say that it was going to happen, and it was going to happen because the powers that be, or whatever you want to call them, were making it happen. Yeah, oh yeah, no, that's absolutely, yeah.
It all matters. Yeah. The natural event going to happen. It's an event that they can see that's going to happen.
Then that brings into question the ethics of the person doing the work. So you have to have a pretty high ethical standard if your soul is going to actually learn, because if you do something like that, your soul is going to have to unlearn and relearn a lot of really heavy stuff, and it's bad karma. I mean, it's just bad. But there are you know, there are certainly people desperate enough to do it. You know, people who want
that going around. I mean, the whole
all
of the different things that we've done to each other, you know, and to the earth. And we talked about this earlier when off record. We were talking about how it really there just isn't in this world the way it is. In this 3D, 4D world in time space, the way that it is with vibration, you have any time that one person can have a really great setup, it has to be supported by someone. Like, if you're going to have a really nice dinner with a bunch of servants helping to make it a really nice dinner where everybody, all of the guests, can enjoy their meal. That is, especially if a more drastic example is when you have a really nice holiday where it's a family gathering and everybody can have that and go to a nice restaurant on a family gathering. Well, there are people who have to cook the meal, be supporting that, and even staying back afterwards to clean dishes and clean up after everything. And their families are at home, or they're not in that position. They're supported.
And they're paid, and they're paid pitifully little money to do it.
I think even if they're paid a lot, you know, there's it isn't a scenario where they can all sit down and share. You know, it's somebody has to balance.
Yeah, it balances. There's a loss there. One person's gain is another person's loss. So, I just try to use and take as little as I can, and what I have to use, I try to balance it by giving back in an equal amount. In some way. And I think that's about, you know, I think that's what everybody should do, but just, you know, buying and taking and living in a big house, the house is way bigger than you need, and it's just not a healthy way to live for the soul.
Well, it begs to lead us into really interesting conversations around beyond vibration, but we'll hold off on that for now.
Yeah, I want to hold off on that because, and I have a reason for doing it for all of you who are listening to this one, who have been working on the audio ones. I put those in a very particular order and posted them. And then watched you guys hone in on the last two and skip over the first ones. Oh, I can do that. I can do that. I can do that. And then I kept getting questions that you needed to move back. And so I'm holding beyond vibration until you get a little bit further along and can at least do an altered state of consciousness before you try to go beyond vibration.
I bet that'll end up being a padlock section of the forums or something. You'll be having a gatekeeper on that, I bet.
But it's just as long as we don't put a combination on it, because I don't have very good long term, short term memory. That wouldn't do to lose the combination to that one, would it?
No, but I look forward to talking about it. It's very exciting. It's something
It's not going to be very much longer, and
probably only about six months.
No, it won't be that long. Just maybe a couple of months, and I'm going to give you some more time.
A couple of months. The world could come to an end by a couple of months.
have a little faith. No, we're going to be fine.
As long as I can get
through hurricane season, September and October, but thank goodness for laptops. But anyway.
Well, we'll go into other stuff. We'll leave it there for now.
Yeah, I want to, the next one I want to do is I want to do one on compassion and how we can go about showing compassion and some of the things that we can do. So maybe we can talk about that next time.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. And there are quite a few other things that I'm thinking of that we can talk about, but we'll pace it out.
And if people have ideas for interviews, they can go on the forum in Diana's folder and just make a suggestion.
And no suggesting straight jackets.
No straight jackets. I'm afraid of what a coyote could do to me with a straight jacket.
Yeah. Well, there's all right. Well, look, it's been fun. We'll move on, and thank you everyone for listening.
Yeah, thank you. And as if we say in this part of Florida, later, Gator.
Later, Gator. And what do we say down here in Australia? Is catch you around like a whistle. Or cheers, big ears. Anyway, all right, catch you later.
Okay.